This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 3rd at 10:38 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like Rob Portman will finally admit that President Trump lost his bid for re-election. Portman still won't call Joe Biden the president-elect. Let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and the Snollygosters who shrewdly deny reality for fear of annoying vocal members of their party. I'm Mike Thompson. Steve Brown is off this week, enjoying the view from Richwood and building snowmen with his kids, at least according to his Facebook page. So good for Steve this week. Coming up later in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week Award honors 0.4% of the Ohio House. But first, the Ohio Democratic Party is looking for a new leader. David Pepper, who has led the party since 2015, is stepping down. He announced this week he will leave his post at the end of the year. Pepper became chairman after the 2014 election, where Governor John Kasich rolled to victory over Ed Fitzgerald. Since then, Democrats have done a little better. Ted Strickland lost badly to Rob Portman in 2016, but Sherrod Brown won re-election in 2018. Democrats have picked up 3 seats on the Ohio Supreme Court, but Republicans continue their hold on all statewide offices. And of course, Donald Trump easily won Ohio in both 2016 and last month. David Pepper joins us now. Chairman Pepper, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Are you leaving because Democrats did not do better in the last election?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think that I'm leaving. These jobs just have a shelf life to them. This is the end of my third cycle. And at some point, you know, like in not everything, but a lot of things, transition is good. New ideas is good. And, you know, this is a job where you're helping everyone you can. And that's how I viewed it, helping every candidate could. But you're also asking people for a lot of help. And at some point, I think if you're self-aware, sometimes it's better to turn the reins over for someone else to be asking so much of so many. I mean, really, it gets to a point where just a fresher face is helpful. I mean, in 6 years, believe it or not, I'm one of the longest serving state chairs in the country. These are just jobs that have that turnover. I think that's a problem that many are there for 2 years and leave. 6 is longer than most. But this was less about performance. Now, some online would say, well, yeah, throw them out because of performance. As you said, you know, I started when the party had lost by 30 points, all but 2 counties. The party was basically in debt pretty high. The institution is in a far better place now. We didn't win things we wanted to win necessarily, but we made some gains on some the things we controlled most that are not left to the whims of the national environment. Getting people to vote through their ballot. We win 3 out of 7 Supreme Court seats, elect our first African-American Democrat ever statewide, an African-American woman in particular. We now have a majority of the appellate seats of the state of Ohio because we've convinced our voters to vote through their ballot. Our local footprint is much stronger, so our bench is better. We didn't win other ones that I wish we had. We put it all on the line for Joe Biden. We didn't win here, but I love that Trump was worried enough that he was in Circleville and Dayton and Toledo in the final week. So that was a national victory I'm proud to have been part of. So there's a lot to learn, a lot more to do, a lot of improvement to make. But I feel overall for where we started, you know, we did a good job. And institutionally, we're in a stronger place than we were. And so my number one goal right now is the strengths of the institution to pass along to the next chair. And then we should all be all ears on ways that next year thinks we can do better in the ways that we didn't succeed in the last 6 years.
I don't want to Monday morning quarterback the 2020 election too much, but you mentioned Joe Biden, and he lost here by a similar margin that Hillary Clinton did. But Hillary Clinton campaigned hard here. Would Ohio Democrats have done better had Joe Biden campaigned harder here than he did in this past election?
I mean, marginally. He's president-elect Biden. So I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback president-elect Biden. I think in the grand arc of history, defeating Donald Trump will go down as one of the most important events that any of us have ever been part of. He was such a threat to our democracy. So if Joe Biden decided early on, I must win Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and that is my goal. And for that reason, I'm not going to do as much in other states that would be nice to win but aren't essential. It's hard for me to say when that's how he won that, boy, did he blow it. No, he's going to be president, and thank goodness. Now, myself and Sherrod Brown and Joyce Beatty, we were all begging for more. I mean, we wanted more. They gave us more at the last few weeks. But in the end of the day, you know, this isn't complaining because they won, and I'm glad they did. But we had a field staff about 35 people. That's about as much you can cover Cuyahoga County by at best. And so, sure, when we know to win Ohio, you've got to do some deep engagement in your cities to get turnout. You've got to communicate in these rural areas that, hey, Democrats are not what you're hearing. We're actually here to help. You can't do that with 35 staff, and you can't do it with $4 or $5 million of television. And so, sure, you only win Ohio through a fully engaged effort. We didn't have that. I do think that hurt people down ticket. At the same time, Joe Biden's job was to win the presidency, and he did. And I will say this, if they had diverted tens of millions from Wisconsin and we had lost by 6 here and they lost Wisconsin by 1, I would have felt guilty for the rest of my life because we had to beat Donald Trump. So it's a team sport. We played our role as best we could. We fought as hard as we could. And in the meantime, we won our third Supreme Court seat, which was our top in-state priority always. And winning that seat gives us an independent court for the first time in a generation. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously you're not going to win Ohio unless it's all in. And in the end, they'll tell you, oh no, we weren't all in there. We were all in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Speaking of field games and groundwork, grassroots, Democrats did not do a whole lot of door-to-door campaigning for fear of COVID. Of course, that's a safer public health strategy, right? But did that hurt your candidates, especially the candidates down ballot, state rep, senator?
Again, I respect Joe Biden's. There's a reason why none of the major players on the Democratic side got COVID or spread it, and Donald Trump did. Joe Biden, from the very beginning, was impressively disciplined on not doing anything to contribute to spread. That included door knocking. Never once would I have said, you know, you should change that policy. But by far the most important way, especially in communities that are less engaged, doing worse economically, door to door is the single best way to get people to come out. You know, text messaging, phone calls, you know, that's better than nothing, but we know that door to door matters. So when I see that there are a lot of things to look at, and this is not making excuses for other things that needed to be better. But if you tell someone you're going to run a presidential campaign, but you can't knock on any doors, that is so foreign to the best practices of how you generate turnout. The truth is, that's one of the reasons, not the only, but that's one of the reasons why in most major cities, not just Ohio cities, Philadelphia, you know, Milwaukee, their performance was a little bit like Cleveland. It was a little off. Now, Cincinnati and Columbus, we actually did better for Trump, for Biden, than we did for Clinton. Cleveland and Akron, Trump did better than he did in 16 by a little bit. Overall, we did a little bit better in cities as a state, just like these other states. But we didn't do a lot better, and that's concerning because you'd think we would. But I do think the lack of door knocking, the single best way to go to places and get the vote out, clearly that played a role. But was it worth not spreading the virus? Yeah. Sure. I mean, I asked my wife, who's like my one person focus group. She's not all that political, which is helpful. I was like, what would you do if someone came to your door? I asked her a few months ago when this was a big topic. She goes, I wouldn't want to answer it. Like, I don't know who they are. So I actually think it was respectful of the voters, but no doubt I think it played some role.
Yeah. Another thing is the Larry Householder scandal, huge scandal, broke over the summer. Now, it did break after candidate fields were set.
Right.
But it was not a big presence in the campaign, at least compared to the size of the scandal. Why not make a bigger deal out of it?
So I'll push back a little bit. If sure. You were in any of the closer state house races and state senate races, the candidates actually made a big deal out of it. Okay. I don't know if you were in one of those, but with whatever resources they had, it would have been hit on very hard, digitally, mail. We did a poll in this fall. Householder had some of the worst numbers you will ever see. People knew about it. I think the challenge is we are in an age of scandal. Donald Trump is the most corrupt, scandalous president we've ever seen. Look how he did. He won Ohio. So the problem with scandal right now is I worry, and it's sad, that voters just expect it. And if it's on their side, if you say to them, your person's really committed a scandal, vote him out. If they have heard that the other side is socialists and this and that, and they assume both sides are doing it, they're like, well, I'm still voting for my side. So the candidates for state House and state Senate, I'll give them, they hit it hard on that as best they could with what they had. But I think we're at a point where it's so partisan that someone's showing up. I mean, I think what happened in these state House races is actually quite simple. Trump had very high turnout and Trump people showed up. And then a whole lot of Republicans who didn't like Trump showed up. They voted for Biden and then they voted for Republicans. I think one of the lessons has to be, it's, I don't think you don't talk about it, but I do think that when it comes to scandal, either it has to be very simple, like you don't have a driver's license, which is much less scandalous than Larry Hassel did, but people get that. But more than anything, you got to explain how it affects their life. And I think that what's lost in these scandals, you know, and they're every 2 years, you know, ECOT, the Speaker Rosenberger, householder. What's happening in this state is there's a tax on this corruption, which is leading to worse schools, you know, higher energy bills. And I think maybe the solution is you got to connect the scandal to how it affects people's own lives, or they basically are saying everyone's corrupt. I'm still voting for my side. Columbus feels so far away to most people. I say that from Cincinnati, like they're not paying attention. And for something to break through, it's got to be more than just something happened 100 miles away that doesn't affect your life. So that would be part of it.
Looking big picture now, you know, many pundits, including some Democrats, a number of Democrats, say that Ohio has basically become Indiana, a solidly red Midwestern state. Is that true?
Look at 2018, where they had a pretty popular Democratic senator who lost badly. We had a popular Democratic senator who won by 8. It's just not true. We are somewhere between Indiana and Michigan. We have been for a long time. So if you look at the bottom line fundamentals of what just happened, we're still in that same place. You know, Michigan's rural areas were more for Trump than 4 years ago. Their urban areas had a very similar dynamic to ours, a slight improvement, and their suburbs shifted like ours did towards Democrats. We had the same thing. We just have a lot more rural areas, so it plays out differently. And Indiana is more to the right of that. So I think people are so quick to draw these blanket conclusions. With Trump on the ballot, no doubt it's difficult because our rural areas are showing up in much bigger numbers than they have. That makes it hard. But 2018 showed, you know, Sherrod wins by 8. Cordray against a household name in Mike DeWine, not running, you know, he ran a good campaign. He could have run a better campaign. Mike DeWine ran a very smart campaign. Despite all that, Cordray lost by less than 4. So I would say in a year where you don't have Trump generating massive turnout, we're a state that somewhere is between an 8-point win for Sherrod, a 4-point loss for Cordray. So that is a competitive state. Trump, if any candidate, including Trump, is able to whip up rural Ohio into the frenzy he did, rural Ohio is so big, it's very hard. But I think people shouldn't over, you know, we had this battle for 2 years. And we begged and pleaded with Priorities USA and others, quit telling the world that we're a red state, because if you say it enough, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's one reason I'm afraid that the Biden campaign, they didn't invest early. They agreed generally with how hard it is. And it is hard, but I think it's a mistake for anyone to say you write it off. I'm glad Donald Trump didn't think it was a red state for sure, because he spent time here instead of being Kenosha or Ann Arbor. He was in Circleville. Yeah. You got to always be on offense. And I think it's realistic to think the right candidate in the right moment can clearly still win Ohio. You got to do it just right. You got to be all in, but it can be done.
Sherrod Brown, he won re-election, but he didn't do as well as he had in past cycles. And the Democrats, while making gains in the suburbs and dominating the cities even more than they have in the past, they still, as you mentioned, they still have a lot of work to do in the rural areas and in, you know, working class counties like Mahoning and Trumbull counties up in the Youngstown area. How does the party get those voters back? or at least just cut into those margins.
Scheer did better in 18 than he did in 12 when Obama was on the ballot. I mean, so it's actually not accurate. He 18 was a year where you start to see this suburban shift. And so Sherrod was doing better in large counties than he's ever done before. Now he
lost more counties, though.
He lost margin in other places, but as a total margin, and this is lost on folks, he did better in 18 than he did when Obama won Ohio, which is actually tells you something about there's some shifting going on at different levels. But if you have a massive red turnout, that shifting gets hidden. So I'm very, first of all, you got to be authentic in the way that Sherrod is. And Sherrod is so kind of in who he is. The people in communities that are shifting towards red are still sticking with Sherrod because they know that he's fighting for them on their economic well-being. They come first. And so when someone, I think, reaches that level of authentic leadership and they see in everything he does, he's fighting for them, the nonsense that's run that people are socialists doesn't stick. And the fact that they may not agree with him on, you know, gun issues or something else, they'll say, that's okay, because he's fighting for me. And unless Democratic candidates or the party, unless their core brand is, I'm fighting for the everyday Ohioan through thick or thin for their jobs, wages, and pensions, I think some of the disagreements then overwhelm that voter and say, well, I'm not voting for him because he's going to do this or that. But with Sherrod, he's enough. It's in the veins, basically, that he's fighting for them. That I think they say, oh, that's the guy who fights for me. It's kind of like Howard Metzenbaum. You know, the guy was way progressive for Ohio, but he's fighting for me. He gets it. He gets my life. And I think that Sherrod accomplishes that. So that's one thing that I think any candidate, they've got to get there. But the second one is, and this is bigger. I wrote a memo to the Biden Transition Committee about this. We as a party, and this is way bigger than Ohio, we have not laid out what we plan to do to help small towns in this country. And these small towns are dying. And they're dying for the same reason big cities are struggling. The biggest employer left, their infrastructure is falling apart, healthcare is a huge problem, young people are leaving. And these towns, the Republican agenda basically undermines everything they need, okay? Nothing they need is helped by Republicans. But they often are voting for those same Republicans, which is the sad irony. But Democrats have never said, hey, we get it. You know, Manchester, Ohio, which is a town near Cincinnati on the river, the entire downtown is empty. It's broken glass, abandoned buildings. Have we ever said to Manchester, Ohio's Democrats, here's our plan to help you? No. So they don't hear from either side. They're dwindling. And I do think that makes some voters think, well, I'm going to fall for the guy who's saying it's, you know, the immigrants' fault or something else. I think the best thing for them is that Joe Biden himself stand up and say, I'm Joe Biden from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and I get what's happening, not just in our big cities, which you deal with, but in Mansfield, Ohio. And here's my plan to deal with that. It involves infrastructure and new jobs and green jobs and education. But I think we have to be much more explicit that we as Democrats are going to help our core cities, of course, and they need help, but also roll into that agenda all these smaller towns, which are like big cities, but many of them, they don't have a private employer at all to speak of.
So that presents the need for a candidate like Sherrod Brown, progressive in his politics, but seen as a moderate, seen as a centrist. There's a growing chorus on the left, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, that wants more of a focus on social issues, you know, for lack of a better term, defunding the police and Medicare for all, which gets labeled as socialism. How do you satisfy both sides of your party if you're trying to win these small towns and trying to win voters in these small towns who tend to be a little more skeptical of government?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's up to the candidate. So Sherrod, by the way, I wouldn't call Sherrod even a moderate. I mean, he's progressive on a lot of issues, yeah. But his core
he is a moderate, yeah.
Right, but I think it's not even a label on the spectrum. It's not moderate or liberal. He's for you. He's fighting for you in Mansfield, Ohio. And I think it's more of a personal, like, this guy's got your back. And that cuts through, I think, the labels of moderate, liberal, whatever. Because, I mean, he's a mix of approaches. And I think that's where it starts. It's sort of a personal brand that you're fighting for everyday people. And then if they know that, then they'll be, I've heard people say this all the time, I'm sure. Hey, I don't agree with them everything, but the guy's got my back. And I think that's part of it. And the other part, you know, and this debate about, you know, there are different parts of the country, there are different districts, they want different things. And I think that candidates have to be clear, you know, where they're running, what they're for. People will always try and label them, you know, the most extreme when they're not. And I think, you know, does it present challenges? Sure. And in Cincinnati, the woman who was a wonderful candidate running against Shabbat, you would have thought Shabbat was running against AOC. I mean, it's all he talked about. Positions that Kate Schroeder didn't have were what were running the ads. So it's a challenge. I think she could have won in a different atmosphere despite that. I've seen people win despite that. But I think people need to run in the districts they're in and be authentic to who they are and lay out their positions. And I don't, you know, they shouldn't tell AOC how to run her district. But I also think people in those districts need to be, you know, mindful that in another district, you know, that's not what the people in those districts support. And that's not what the candidate's going to support.
Some progressive Democrats, getting into the sort of the weeds a bit and how the Democratic Party operates in Ohio, some progressive Democrats say, you know, labor unions still have too much say in how the Ohio Democratic Party is run. Union leaders have a big say in who runs the party, which candidates the party supports. Now, of course, labor is very important in terms of fundraising and organization and the history of the party. But is it time for the Democratic Party to look to other voices as it plots a strategy going forward?
I mean, so the last specific question, we should always be talking other voices. But before you got to that one, I was going to push back hard and say the people who want to dismiss the role of labor in our party are just wrong. If we're going to do well across the state, I mean, first of all, a lot of those people have a very antiquated view of what labor looks like. You know, labor is diverse. Labor, it represents a huge amount of African-Americans in our cities and, you know, white working folks in rural areas. But when people dismiss labor, it sometimes I worry they're doing it with a very old school view of who the organized workers are in this country and in this state. You know, teachers and janitors. I mean, the more the better, as far as I'm concerned. The erosion of labor is one of the reasons that we're struggling so much economically, and we have an economy that haves and have not. So I think if Democrats were to take that advice, things would get a lot worse, not better, not just for the party, but for the country. We're paying the price of the fact that the Koch brothers have been attacking labor for decades and in a very, you know, intentional and sophisticated way. But that doesn't mean we walk away from people who forget how they treat Democrats, who are on the right side of economics. But to your point, one of the best things that's happened in the last few years, since 16, is there are all these new progressive groups that have popped up all over states like Ohio, indivisible groups, women's march, you know, chapters. And some of them are in cities, many of them are in rural areas. And to the extent we've lost some of the infrastructure in those areas, we intentionally reached out to all these groups to say, okay, maybe labor's a little weaker in your area than it used to be. Maybe the county party's as strong as it needs to be, but your rural indivisible group is amazing. And we've tried to partner with them. So when you say reach out to other voices, absolutely. But it's not a zero sum with labor. I mean, labor isn't just a key part of the Democratic coalition. They also are on the right side of economic justice. And I actually think the better we are at that, the better we'll do.
So
dismissing that would be a mistake.
Looking at the results and the exit polling, why did 57% of union households in Ohio vote for Trump, where 56% of union households in Michigan voted for Biden?
That's a great question. And it could go back to our overall mix. You know, we have in the mix of, so what happened in Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin was very similar. Rural moved away from us more than he did in 16. Urban slightly moved towards us. Suburban towards us. So some of the explanation will be just related to that. We have more rural labor, but I also wouldn't make it that simple. I think it's something that obviously labor leaders, we all were talking to them all year about whatever we can all do to help make sure that labor families and labor you know workers get it on why Biden's better. We need to do, and that's obviously a conversation that has to be had within labor. How can we do more and more? I can tell you they worked as hard as you could work to try and communicate with their members. And we saw in polling that those other states did have all the way through a higher percentage of their workers and their labor families and their retirees for Biden than we did.
One more question and we'll let you go. We've talked about, you know, what type of candidate it's going to take to win statewide. And of course, now we're looking at 2022 and Rob Portman's on the ballot. Mike DeWine's on the ballot, both up for re-election. We've heard Nan Whaley from Dayton, the mayor, John Cranley, also mayor of Cincinnati, Congressman Tim Ryan. What about you? You ran statewide 6 years ago. You've got statewide name recognition. You've built up goodwill among many Democrats around the state. Are you going to run against Rob Portman and Mike DeWine in 2 years?
I have no idea. I left. My number one job was to be a good chair and to do everything I could. You know, people will talk about how well I did. They're different opinions. I wanted to leave in a way that at a time that made sense. And my number one job in the next month is to do a transition that puts my successor in the best place to succeed. After that, I'll sort of figure out my own path. You know, you may know I'm a writer. I'm a lawyer. I've run for office, so I really don't know. I wouldn't rule things out. At the same time, I didn't do this for a purpose of running for something. You know, one thing I'll say though, and this is, again, I'm not trying to be cute with this, but if you had told me 10 years ago I'd be a chair of a party, I would have thought you were crazy. Like, I actually entered politics as a candidate for city council because I love being in public office to make a difference. So that's more of my nature than being a party chair. What I loved about party chair is I could help other people do public service by helping them win. And that's why, as much as everyone focuses on Biden here or something else, my biggest pride is that all over the state, there are now people in all sorts of offices, mostly local, where they're making a great difference. So yeah, my natural state is being a candidate or office holder. And I'm proud of my record when I was in Cincinnati doing that. So at some point I'd like to run again. I don't know when. I have a young family, a 6 and a 4-year-old. That obviously is a major part of any decision. So we'll see. I really don't have, you know, maybe I should, but I don't have some specific plan in mind at this moment.
All right. David Pepper, outgoing head of the Ohio Democratic Party. Thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Thanks. Great talking to you.
We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious Seabus is WOSU series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. It is time for our weekly award honoring the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. It's our Snollygoster of the Week award. You know, frankly, we hesitate to even recognize this move because of its blatant attempt to grab attention. But frankly, that's what Snollygosters do, right? So this week's award goes to 4 members of the Ohio House of Representatives, 4 of the 99 members, to keep it in perspective. Anyway, State Reps John Becker, Candace Keller, and Paul Zeltwanger of the Cincinnati area, and Nino Vitale of Urbana have filed articles of impeachment against Governor DeWine for his orders during the pandemic. This is the second time they have tried to impeach the governor. Governor DeWine, who never shows his emotion, actually got a little testy at his briefing this week. He urged these state reps to talk to nurses treating COVID patients or talk to family members who have lost loved ones to COVID. And he said this foolishness has to end. So strong words from our governor. So to those 4 state reps who choose now, a time when COVID cases are exploding and hospitals are filling up, to those who choose now to try to impeach the governor for telling us to wear masks, you get our Snollygoster of the Week award. Well, that'll do it for this week. In this season of giving, we ask you to please consider giving us a good rating on iTunes. Apparently, it helps other people find this podcast. For student producer Jack Long, web producer Michael DeBonis, and audio engineer Eric French, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.